Good afternoon and welcome to CSIS. I'm Johanna Nesset, Vice President for Strategic Planning, and I'm delighted to be joined today by Dr. Amit Roy, who leads the International Fertilizer Development Center, and Steve Van Kouwenberg, who is the author of a new report on phosphate reserves and resources. This report was done to address the question of peak phosphate, question about whether one of the key components to fertilizer may be peaking and could potentially start to decline over time and hence diminish our ability to continue to grow enough food to feed the world. So we've asked Dr. Roy and Mr. Van Kouwenberg to join us today and tell us a little bit about the report and also more broadly about the role of fertilizer in food production. Dr. Roy, we'd like to start with you and just ask you to tell us about the role of fertilizer in food production, maybe highlight some of the differences also in fertilizer use in developed countries versus developing countries.
Thank you very much, Joanna. I'm certainly very delighted to be here. Fertilizer has been attributed for increased production of cereal all around the world. Over the last 40 years, the rate of growth of cereal production in developing country has grown faster than in developed country. And when you look at the production of cereal vis-a-vis consumption of fertilizers, you see there is a great correlation between the two. As fertilizer consumption has gone up, so has the production of cereals, particularly in developing country. There are more cereal grown in developing country than in developed country. In terms of the fertilizer use, the country that uses the most fertilizers in the world is China, followed by India, then United States, and then Brazil. Collectively, these four countries account for 70% of the world fertilizer consumption. Going forward, the population of the world is going to reach about 9.2 billion people by 2050. 90% of this increase in population is going to be in developing country. And quite a lot of it is going to be in Asia, followed by sub-Saharan Africa. The fertilizer consumption in Asia, Latin America, and sub-Saharan Africa are projected to grow faster than in developed country. And so the consumption of fertilizer is going to increase quite rapidly as we go forward. Also facing a challenge to the world in terms of fertilizer consumption is how efficiently we use this important input to agriculture. Over the last 60 years, when one looks at the increase in cereal production, 60% of that cereal production increase is attributed to fertilizers. So in that regard, fertilizer is very important ingredient to increasing cereal and food production around the world.
Well, thank you for that background. That gives a lot of context as we think about the importance of our phosphate reserves as a key component in fertilizer. So, Mr. Van Kouwenberg, we'd like to turn to you. We've had concerns about peak phosphate swirling around, concerns that we're running out of phosphate, and this could impact food production worldwide. And we'd like to tell you about your new report, which is called World Phosphate Rock Reserves and Resources, and tell us some of your findings and what you learned about reserves and their locations and our potential production over time.
Thank you, Joanna, for having me here today. I don't know if we'd want to say in response to these articles that have been circulating, but out of concern to these articles that have been circulating for probably about the past 10 years, Dr. Roy charged me with trying to develop a world phosphate rock reserves and resources estimate. Some of this seemed very disturbing as we'd have this peak in 2033-2034. So the objectives of this study were several. I wanted to review the literature and what other knowledgeable authors had done in this area to evaluate the past and current World Phosphate Rock Reserve Resort estimates. I wanted to review how phosphate rock is mined, beneficiated, and how much recovery we could look forward to in mining and processing to see if there were some places where we wouldn't have the opportunity to increase the yield and preserve some of the phosphate recovery and extend reserves and resources. And I wanted to make a preliminary estimate of world reserves and resources. I generally found that the literature flow, I won't say it stopped, but it essentially slowed down back in the late 1980s and 1990s, and a lot of this seemed to have something to do with the end of the International Geologic Correlation Program, Project 156, which was on phosphorites. After that, there's just not a lot of literature available, and most of the literature is available through various trade association meetings. World phosphate rock reserve and resource estimates prior to this time were done by a variety of agencies, and some of these estimates were done by geologists, and some were done by mining engineers, and some were done by multidisciplinary teams. In general, geologists would tend to make the most optimistic estimates of reserves and resources, whereas mining engineers and economists and other people, when they became involved, they had to actually go in and calculate volumes, and they had to do test work and how much yield they would have, and then they have to do a tremendous amount of work to determine what reserves might be, and the multidisciplinary teams tend to cut these estimates back. But what I did was I worked my way back on a country-to-country basis through the literature, it depends on what deposit I was looking at. Some I had good estimates for, and some I didn't have good estimates for until I went way back perhaps 20 years ago, and I tried to give a producer-based estimate or somebody that actually gone in and done a good estimate on a deposit by actually drilling holes in a deposit, doing a lot of chemistry, and making a lot of detailed estimates. And what I found was, and contrary to most estimates that indicate about 15 to 16 billion tons of phosphate rock reserves, I came up with a figure of about 60 billion tons of phosphate rock reserves. And my reserves are recalculated in terms of typical product for a country or a bunch of deposits in a country. And that means that this is a concentrate generally that can be used to make some sort of fertilizer, whereas a lot of the previous estimates, they were kind of a hodgepodge of ore estimates and reserve estimates. I think examining phosphate mining, beneficiation, and P2O5 recovery, I think what's apparent is they're using a lot of big equipment. Much of it is very similar to what they use in coal mining, very large scale, but over time this has evolved. But there's a lot of opportunity for increased recovery in terms of P2O5 and rock and many deposits around the world, how we could recover more of this P2O5. Phosphate rock is a non-renewable resource, and I believe, and I know IFDC believes that, you know, we should conserve this resource as much as possible, and we should recycle as much as possible. This would not seem to be the crisis it would be indicated to be in various literature or things you can find around the internet. Thank you.
Well, thanks very much. And now we want to close up with one final question for Dr. Roy. We'd like to ask you to talk a little bit about some of the issues around sustainability and the environmental impact of fertilizer. I know that IFDC has done a great deal of work in these areas, and we'd like you to talk a little bit about some of the technology, education, and other efforts that you have undertaken in these issues.
Thank you very much. When we look at the demand for food and fiber, related to the population increase and dietary change, fertilizer would continue to be very important in terms of increasing productivity and yield of major crops. In terms of fertilizer, there are three primary nutrients, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. And I'm going to talk about each of these in the context of their availability and issues related to environmental impact, and share with you some of the experiments and some of the results that we have achieved in terms of improving their efficiency. Nitrogen is there in the air. 80% of the air we breathe has nitrogen in it. But we need energy to convert the nitrogen into a form that the plant can use. And the amount of energy that is required is nearly energy contained in 4 barrels of oil to produce 1 ton of most common nitrogen fertilizer that is used worldwide, and that is urea. And the efficiency of use of urea, depending on where you are, ranges from 30% to 40%. In developing country, it is about 30%. That is, when a farmer applies 3 bags of urea fertilizer, he or she gets the benefit of only 1 bag, and 2 bags are lost. So from the standpoint of energy, we are losing 2/3 or 4 barrels of oil for every ton of urea that is used. Globally, we are using 120 million tons of urea, which was used in 2008. So we can quickly calculate the amount of energy that is lost because of inefficiency. Now, one can improve the efficiency through better management. But in developing country, I want to share with you an example that has been done in Bangladesh, which uses a significant amount of fertilizer to produce rice. And in rice production, they lose 33%. But there's a simple technology that they're using, which is the making of a large granules from the conventional fertilizers and inserting them below the surface. And the result is they have been able to reduce the consumption of urea by 40%, yet they are getting 20% more yield. So this is just an example of how to improve the efficiency. And in other parts of the world, there are other technologies that have been used. Let me now talk about phosphates. Stephen Van Conberg had talked about the phosphate resource and reserves. It is a finite resource. In terms of the efficiency of use of phosphorus, and we have seen, depending on the method of calculation, we can recover as much as 90%. But the losses that take place in terms of the phosphate is the point at which it is mined to the point at which this phosphate is taken to the plant for conversion. The losses are anywhere between 20 to 60%. So we have to find a way to reduce those losses to expand the reserve base. That is one area that needs attention very quick. One option is, can we use phosphate rock that is mined directly for the plant? And the answer is yes and no. In some cases, one can do it. In other cases, it will not be as effective. But we are now looking at technology with new knowledge and information in scientific field that one can convert that into a form which will be available to the plant in most cases. In terms of potash, potash is a salt. It does not require chemical treatment when it is mined. But it is very expensive to develop a mine. A mine for potash takes anywhere between 7 to 10 years, cost about $3 to $6 billion to open a mine. The potash mines are mainly in temperate zone, concentrated in 5 countries, which is Canada, United States, Russia, Germany, and Belarus. These collectively produce about 80% of the world potash. So you do have the potash supplies coming from very few areas. The efficiency of use is good, but nevertheless, we still have to look at how to improve further the efficiency of potash in the context of overall fertilizer application. So there is a lot of research going on in terms of improving the efficiency of its use. There's a lot of research that is going on in terms of conversion of this to finished product. There's also work going on in terms of delivery of this nutrient more efficiently and effectively to the farmers at a lower cost. Thank you.
Well, thanks to both of you for this very informative discussion. I should note that your report is available on the CSIS website, csis.org, and your website as well, ifdc.org. And CSIS has a number of publications and podcasts on food security and related issues, so you're welcome to find those on our website as well. Thanks to both of you. Have a good afternoon.